Many of you will recall one of the most stirring videos that emerged right after October 7th, that of an Israeli reservist called up to army service, watching via Zoom the circumcision of his 8-day-old son. He pronounced the traditional liturgy over his phone, concluding with one of the most poignant blessings in Jewish life. Blessed art thou, Lord our God, who has kept us alive, allowed us to endure, and allowed us to reach this moment. Welcome to Parsha and Politics, Parashat Tazria, a funeral and a bris. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Parsha and Politics, How Torah Changed the World, is generously sponsored by Ivan Kaufman. Rabbi Soloveitchik's podcasts and essays on the Book of Leviticus are generously sponsored by Dr. Michael Schmerin and his family. This week's episode is generously sponsored by Patricia Aftel in memory of Tzvi Ben Yaakov Moshe.
At the end of December 2023, IDF Staff Sergeant Elisha Yehonatan Lober fell in battle in Gaza. The funeral, held at Mount Herzl, was infused with the profound faith that marked the family of the fallen soldier. Arutz 7 Israel National News described what transpired. Quote, on Wednesday morning, family members and friends attended the funeral of Staff Sergeant Elisha Yehonatan Lober, who was killed in battle in the Gaza Strip. The funeral took place at the Mount Herzl Military Cemetery. At the request of the family, the funeral procession opened with the singing of a Hasidic tune, the same one which was played as Yehonatan walked to his wedding ceremony. The IDF representative, Lieutenant Colonel Ido Meushar, eulogized. Today we pay tribute to a true hero. You volunteered. You strived to achieve out of devotion. We have lost such a precious person. There is no comfort in words in the face of bereavement. We will walk in his light and in the way of Yehonatan. Thank you for all you have done and for the man you were. End quote. This alone from the funeral is profoundly moving, but perhaps most stirring of all were the words uttered by the widow of the fallen hero, who was 7 months pregnant. Quote, Avia Lober, Yehonatan's widow, eulogized in tears. My love, how much you loved this country. When you spoke of it, I was jealous. This war was everything for you. You were so sincere. I begged you not to die. The birth is in 2 months. You are coming. I am not going alone, cried Avia. End quote. We consider this heartbreaking and stirring story as we approach our parasha, which also begins with an expectant woman that gives birth. This opening passage inspires a striking rabbinic commentary that, rightly understood, sheds light not only on the reading itself, but also on the Jewish approach to life, capturing the essence of our identity. When I discussed Parashat Tazria in Bible 365, I began with a quote uttered by an enemy of Israel, Hassan Nasrallah of Hezbollah, who had uttered words that I called simultaneously egregiously evil and enormously insightful. He said, quote, we have discovered how to hit the Jews where they are the most vulnerable. The Jews love life, so that is what we shall take away from them. End quote. At the time of recording that episode of Bible 365, I scarcely suspected that a leader of Hamas, Ali Baraka, would express the same sentiment after one of the worst attacks on Jews in Jewish history. It was soon after October 7th that Baraka distinguished between his Hamas terrorists and Israelis, saying, quote, the Israelis are known to love life. We, on the other hand, sacrifice ourselves. We consider our dead to be martyrs, end quote. These statements are expressions of evil, but it is indeed true that deeply ingrained in Jewish identity, and therefore in Israeli society, is the love of life. And as I explained in Bible 365, the laws of impurity, or tumah, which is the subject of the next several chapters in Leviticus, and of both this week's reading and the next, are to be understood as rooted in this Jewish love of life. One who is impure, or tameh, is forbidden from entering sacred spheres within the temple or tabernacle. At the heart of these rules is the biblical love of life. Any symbolic reminder of loss of life is kept far away from the sanctuary, the center of Jewish life. As I further explained, becoming impure is not forbidden and indeed often obligatory. And, counterintuitively, even an act or event that leads to the sustaining of life can also produce tumah. Thus, at the end of next week's reading, usually read together with our own, we are told that a man that has engaged in marital relations is in a state of impurity until he immerses in a mikvah, a ritual pool. Similarly, our own reading begins with a discussion of a woman who has given birth, who also experiences impurity. Both have been involved in moments that are at the heart of the vision of Jewish family life, but because each has expended the life-giving power within them, at least for a moment, therefore, impurity is incurred, and each must undergo certain purification rituals, before they enter certain sacred parts of the Temple Mount. The same rationale for impurity can be given for the form of Tumah that occupies much of the reading for this week and the next. Called Tzarat, it is usually defined as leprosy, but Jacob Milgram has shown that this is inaccurate, and that it is something for Leviticus that can afflict and render impure not only people, but also garments and houses. What precisely Tzarat is, and whether this is a regular biological affliction or perhaps something supernatural, is beyond the realm of certainty. What is clear, as Milgram notes, is that it is a reminder of death, loss of life, and therefore a source of impurity. We shall devote next week's Parsha and Politics to the Bible's discussion of these mysterious laws. For now, we will engage the opening of our reading, which discusses childbirth, impurity, and also includes one single sentence that serves as the source for enormously important teachings regarding Jewish family life. Our reading begins. The Lord said to Moses, "Say to the people of Israel, if a woman conceives and bears a male child, then she shall be impure 7 days." And the Parsha adds, "Uvayom ashmini yimol besar or lato," and on the 8th day the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. In the midst of discussing childbirth, Scripture stresses a commandment with which we are already familiar, the obligation to circumcise a boy, and mark his entry into the Abrahamic covenant on the 8th day following his birth. This sentence superficially seems strange, as we have already been introduced in Genesis to all of the laws of circumcision in instructions enunciated by the Almighty to Abraham. It is not initially clear why the Torah saw fit, in the midst of its discussion of childbirth, to stress the obligation of circumcision once again. For the Talmud, the repetition here is meant to teach us several laws about circumcision that we would not otherwise have known, all derived from the words of our verse. On the 8th day, Ubayom Hashmini, the circumcision shall take place. And rightly understood, these laws tell us a great deal about the Jewish vision of life itself. First, the rabbi stressed that the Bible's phrase, on the 8th day, signals that the marking of the covenant must take place when there is daylight. Circumcision in the evening is invalid. Only after the appearance of the dawn's early light on the horizon is a circumcision acceptable. This is not only a technical regulation, but also, I think, a law whose philosophical point is profound. Despite so many dark periods in our history, Jews see in newborn life the dawn of a new day. Through centuries of suffering, even in the worst of times, our ancestors saw in a new link between past and posterity the ultimate ray of hope on the horizon. Jews do indeed love life, and that is why new life has always served as a source of luminance, especially in the darkest of moments. That is the spiritual symbolism of this legal rule. Many of you will recall one of the most stirring videos that emerged right after October 7th, that of an Israeli reservist called up to army service, watching via Zoom the circumcision of his 8-day-old son. He pronounced the traditional liturgy over his phone, concluding with one of the most poignant blessings in Jewish life. "Blessed art thou, Lord our God, shechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'hagiyanu lazman hazeh, who has kept us alive, allowed us to endure, and allowed us to reach this moment." The video epitomized what was at stake. Israel's culture indeed cherishes life, while Hamas and its allies worship death. And for Judaism, it is precisely when father and mother in love bring new life into the world that they most imitate the Almighty, who brought creation into existence. It is, alas, this aspect of the moral vision of Judaism that so much of the West has lost. It was soon after Rabbi Jonathan Sacks became a peer of Britain that he issued a warning to Europe regarding the disastrous demographics in so much of the Western world. Thus, the British media reported, quote, "The chief rabbi, who entered the House of Lords last week as Lord Sacks of Aldgate, made his comments in a lecture called Religion in the 21st Century, hosted in London by Theos, a Christian think tank, on Wednesday night. While Sacks aired concerns shared by other clerics about religion contributing positively to public life and the dangers of a secular society, he also went further." And the article goes on to give us a quote from Rabbi Sacks. He said, "Europe today is the most secular region in the world. Europe is the only region in the world experiencing population decline. Wherever you turn today, the more religious the community, the larger on average are their families." The article further tells us, quote, "Europe is dying," he concluded, and compared the situation in the continent today to ancient Greece with its skeptics, Epicureans, and cynics. Also telling us that Rabbi Sacks concluded, "That is one of the unsayable truths of our time," end quote. So Rabbi Sacks warned Europe. In contrast, the Israeli soldier watching from afar over Zoom the circumcision of his son reminded us all of the heart of Judaism and how this love of life and the Jewish desire to sanctify life is bound up with Jewish endurance. And this in turn brings us to the second law learned from our parasha's repetition of the obligation learned already from Abraham. For the rabbis, our parasha stressing again that the circumcision must, if possible, take place on the 8th day, teaches us that at least in usual circumstances, the ritual overrides the Sabbath. While the procedure would usually involve a violation of this sacred day, The holiness of the eighth-day obligation of covenantal circumcision overrides the obligation of the sacred seventh day that is Shabbat. This, too, is not merely a technical legal point. It is also philosophically profound. Shabbat is a celebration of the laws of nature that God placed in the universe. Thus, many begin their Friday evening sanctification of the Sabbath by citing Genesis. Fayar Elokim et kol asher asah v'hineh tov ma'od, and God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. If the covenantal rite overrides the Sabbath, it is because the Jewish covenant is something that overrides the laws of nature. While the seemingly immutable laws of history would indicate that every nation ultimately disappears, there is an exception. Thus Mark Twain famously reflected, quote, "The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out, and they sit in twilight now, or have vanished. The Jew saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was," end quote. These two laws learned from our reading about circumcision enhance each other. The fact that Jews always saw in new life the dawn of a new day reflected who they were, and this sacred value helped ensure their own endurance in the most difficult of moments, miraculously challenging the natural laws of history. 2 months after Elisha Lober's funeral, his son was born. The same publication that described his burial tells us about the circumcision that took place. Quote, "Hundreds participated this morning in the Brit Milah circumcision ceremony for the son of combat soldier Staff Sergeant Elisha Yehonatan Lober, who fell in battle in the Gaza Strip. Grandfather Chagai Lober was the sandik, the person who holds the baby during the circumcision." And the article further tells us, quote, "Speaking to Arutz Sheva, Israel National News, a day before the Brit Milah, Chagai Lober said, 'I don't think this is a family celebration. It's a national celebration. Yehonatan gave his life for the nation, and in a way, he and the baby belong to the nation. This Brit Milah ceremony has national significance, beyond the obligation we all owe to the family of Yehonatan and Aviyah, whose enemies killed him, hoping to extinguish the wonderful light of the Jewish people. But they did not succeed. We continue to thrive. Do not despair and do not stop giving birth and celebrating Brit Milah ceremonies. There is public significance to this event, and we are going to celebrate publicly," end quote. Thus did the father of a fallen soldier hold his grandson and find, in the midst of sorrow, a patch of daylight in this dark time. Thus did this man resplendently reveal how the celebration of life lies at the heart of a people's endurance. The article concluded by describing how the bereaved father, who had been blessed with a grandson, spoke to his fallen son, saying, quote, "You were born to be a dreamer and not a fighter, you, my son. Since Simchat Torah, you have become a fierce warrior, ready to go out to battle. You didn't look for anyone to blame in the government or the army. You didn't look for the left or the right, but you knew that the enemy was the evil terrorists who are able to shoot an elderly Holocaust survivor point blank." So Chagai Lober said, and then he spoke of Jewish unity. Quote, "I want to say that Yehonatan is no longer just my son. He is your son. Before Simchat Torah, we all went through a difficult time. We felt that our beloved nation was falling apart. The damned enemies came and reminded us that we are one nation and forced us to speak to each other and fight side by side," end quote. So a bereaved father said at the circumcision of his grandson. To mark life following death, to celebrate a bris and see light in darkness, embodies the very values of a covenantal people, one which will never die. This is Meir Soloveitchik wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Looking forward to learning together next week. Signing off.